The events of today have shown us how that we can change things if we need to in order to accomplish the need of the day. We certainly don't want to change anything that's according to God's will, and we're doing exactly the same thing in here that we would have done if we had been in yonder. But I think that everything has worked well, the family's well pleased with the way everything has gone, and I appreciate all that each one of you's done. When we are through here tonight, those of you who can carry a chair, carry one, and maybe even come back and get another over to the room on this side of where the food is. We'll have those chairs in there, and then I suspect tomorrow at the funeral we may need some extra chairs. And the songbooks, put them back in the pews, just quietly if you can, or stack them on the back pew, and we can do that tomorrow before visitation starts. And we'll have this ready then to set up the tables in here, and we can bring the chairs back in here after the funeral to take care of the family when they come, but that'll take care of itself. I appreciate the way in which so many of you have cooperated. Tonight, we are bringing to a close a series of lessons that we've had from Luke 15. When I have a series of lessons, there are different types of lessons, and I enjoy preaching in series. In fact, several of these lessons that I've been using are lessons that I use in gospel meetings and some of the series that I use there. This will be the 10th lesson out of Luke 15. We've studied about the lost sheep, the lost coin, the father, the world, the elder brother, the prodigal son as he left, the prodigal son as he came back. And really, the most of the chapter deals with the story of the one we call the prodigal son. And tonight, the last lesson that we have in this series is one that I call What the Prodigal Son Did Not Say. Many times, what's not said is as important as what is said. Silence can be one of the best things that can happen, and sometimes silence speaks for itself. There were times in the relationship between my wife and me that it was what she didn't say that bothered me more than what she did say. Especially if I thought she had something on her mind and wouldn't say exactly what she had on her mind. But I want to share with you tonight some things that the prodigal son might have said when he found himself in the hog pen. Was so hungry that he would have eaten the husk that he was of the grain that he was feeding the hogs, realized and remembered what was back at home. And here are some of the things that he did not say. He did not say, "The devil made me do it." You may remember Flip Wilson, those of you that are a little older, the comedian Flip Wilson. You remember how he often said that, "The devil made me do it." We live at a time when just about everybody wants to blame somebody else for any mistake that's made. It's not uncommon to hear somebody say, "Well, I was abused as a child, and that's why I'm the kind of person that I am today." Now, child abuse is terrible, and I'm rather sure that child abuse can affect one's life even into adulthood. But I am not convinced that it's what causes people to do what they do when they're doing wrong. And so this young man did not say, "The devil made me do it. I wouldn't have had these problems if it hadn't been for the devil." And I suppose there's a sense in which we could say there are a lot of problems we wouldn't have if it weren't for the devil. And he's alive and well and busy in his work. We're admonished in 1 Peter 5:8 to be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary the devil is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. The devil is there. But we can blame the devil for doing it, and even if he did have a part in contributing to the circumstances, when we blame him, we've still got the problem that we've got. In the second place, the prodigal son did not say, "You know, it's in my genes and I couldn't control it." This bothers me about as badly as anything that is happening today, especially some of the sins that are being promoted so greatly right now are promoted with the idea that a person can't help being what they are. You take the problem of homosexuality, and I don't think I've heard any subject discussed any more than that one in the last year. You can't turn on the internet, you can't turn on the television, you can't pick up the newspaper without something the Supreme Court's decided or some ruling that's been overturned. Or this morning I picked up the paper and they were showing lines of gay people in line to get married in California now. And just this last week, one day, I saw where the President of the United States, who's out of the country, had called the two couples that were behind the bringing the case that was the decision of the Supreme Court and congratulated them on their win. It's sickening sometimes to think about what's going on. And the thing that concerns me the most is how many people say, this is just an alternate lifestyle, people can't help it. And how many times have you heard somebody say, I was born that way? Which means, if you'll stop and think about it, if that's true, that God is condemning something that a person can't help. And I've never found anything in the Bible that's like that. God is not going to make us something and then tell us that even though we can't control it, if we do it, it's sin. And so the young man did not say that it was in my genes to do this. I believe there is a tremendous influence on a child by his parents and others in the family. Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:5, Timothy, I see in you an unfeigned faith, a pure faith. And he said, I saw it first in your grandmother Lois and then in your mother Eunice. He didn't say it was in your genes to have this kind of faith. But he said, I saw the example of your grandmother and the example of your mother, and now I see it in your life. Timothy had developed that kind of faith not because of his genes, but because of his upbringing. It may be that we have genes that contribute to our leaning in certain directions. It appears that that is the case. For example, I'm convinced without doubt that there are some people who are more easily turned on by a lascivious appearance than others. There are some men that are more easily provoked into lustful thinking than others. And I know of people today who have to constantly fight certain desires. I guess an alcoholic is an example of that. I remember a friend of mine years ago who said to me, I haven't lived a day since I quit drinking that I didn't want to drink alcohol. But he said, I've been able to control it. He said, I am an alcoholic, but I haven't had a drink, and I forgot how long he said. And I suspect from what people have told me that a man like that will live the rest of his life with tendencies in a certain direction, and I guess that's the word I want to use. I think all of us have tendencies that we like some things better than others, and we may tend to want to go in the wrong direction, but there's a difference in that and having genes that we cannot control. I mentioned a moment ago abuse in childhood, and I would point out that the prodigal son did not say that. There's no evidence that he was abused in childhood, but he at least did not especially like the circumstances of home when he was there. And he might have said, well, you know, my father mistreated me. If my father hadn't done this or my father hadn't done that, I wouldn't have gotten into the trouble I got in. But he didn't say that. He didn't say I was abused as a child. Another thing he did not say is, my brother drove me away. Now, there is some indication in this story that there was not the greatest relationship between the two brothers. I couldn't prove that, but reading between the lines, I see some indication of that. At least, there was not the right relationship when he came back home, was there? Now, there may have been some friction between those two boys as they were growing up. Something caused this young man to want to go away from home. it appears that it was the appeal of what was out there more than it was what was happening at home. But he may have had some problems with his brother at home. And so when he comes back, he says, I want you to know that if my brother had treated me right when I was at home, I wouldn't have left. And so really it's his fault that I got into the trouble I'm in. He didn't say that. Now there is a tendency, especially when we're growing up, for us to blame our siblings. I never will forget, we had four teenagers at once. One of them would say, he done it, he's the cause of it. If he hadn't done this, then... But that doesn't give us the right to do something that's wrong. It may be that our siblings could contribute to something that's a problem, but it doesn't give us the right to do things that are wrong. Another thing that he did not say, I was enticed by harlots and the wrong kind of people. I don't think you can prove exactly what kind of sins this son did when he left home. His brother accused him of being involved with harlots. And if I had to tell you what I believe the brother was probably right. But I couldn't prove that. If he were involved with the wrong kind of people and had spent his money in riotous living in that kind of environment, he didn't mention that when he was turning around to come home. He didn't say, well, I'm not to blame. I was just out there and I was enticed by those. He did not say, I was unlucky in the use of my money. Now, he lost all of his money. And sometimes things will happen and we'll say, well, I had bad luck. I'm not for sure that there's as much involved with luck in our lives as there is God's providence and the decisions that we make. But he did not say, I was unlucky in the use of my money. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says that we're to be good stewards. And a steward is one who oversees something that belongs to somebody else. And there's a sense in which you and I don't own anything in this world. We're just overseeing for a while something that belongs to God. Some of us may have more to oversee than others. But he did not make the excuse that I was unlucky in the use of my money. Neither did he say, you know, I'm just a victim of the times. Everybody is doing the same thing that I've been doing. And that's something I guess all of us have heard, even with our own children. Not to the extent of that. But haven't you had your own children say, well, Johnny's parents let him do this. And Susie gets to go and do this. Everybody else is doing it. You're the only parents that won't let us do these things. If you haven't had that said, I would guess it may be possible that you don't have normal children. But anyway, he didn't say that. He didn't say everybody else is doing it. I'm just a victim of the times. If I had lived back 50 years ago when some of these sins weren't out there, I wouldn't have gotten into these. It's just the times in which I'm living. It's the culture in which I'm living. How many times have you heard recently in news? Well, the culture has changed, and it has. And culture can change without it being bad. But he didn't blame that. He did not say, nobody came looking for me. You know, sometimes when people become unfaithful to the church, I'll hear that they've said, well, nobody cares, nobody's been to see me. And there is that side that we do need to go see and to let people know that we care. But that's just looking for an opportunity to blame somebody else. If somebody had shown some interest in me, if somebody had come looking for me, if somebody had come and begged me, I would have been home sooner. He did not say that. And then let me give you this one. He did not say, I didn't really sin. I just made some misleading decisions. I remember a president a few years ago that was impeached. And that was sort of the approach that he took. I didn't really sin. I just made some bad decisions. And how many times have you heard people say, well, really, it's not a sin. It's just some bad judgment. Well, bad judgment sometimes can be a sin, but he did not say that. Now, I've covered several things in the last few minutes that the prodigal son did not say. And basically, every one of these is that he did not blame his problem on somebody else or something else. Here is what he did say. I have sinned. I have a problem. He probably could have pointed a finger at others that did have problems. I think his elder brother had some problems. And I'm sure the people with whom he is associated had problems, but he didn't mention any of them. He said, I have sinned. It's my problem. Number two, he said, I need help. Not in so many words, but that's the idea that's there in that passage. I need help. One of the worst things that can happen to any of us, in my opinion, is to get to the point that you are so independent that you don't think you need anybody else to help you. I visited a man this past week on Monday who was a member of the church where I was preaching. He is, I think, about 80 years old, maybe a little younger than that. He's 4'9", a little fellow. Has been very faithful to the church. Preacher said, I've seen him come to church when he didn't feel like getting out of the chair. He now is on oxygen. He's on a feeding tube to where he has to take it loose, and even the water that he consumes, he puts it in that tube. Lives by himself. When we were there, the preacher said something about, you need some water, don't you? And he said, yes. The preacher said, I'll get it. He said, no, I'll get it. He wouldn't let the preacher do anything, even getting the water out of the refrigerator. He said, I'll get it. The preacher said, when we left, said, that's just the way he is. He's independent. I guess on a positive note, that's the reason he's still living. That he is independent and thinks he can take care of himself. But folks, we need each other. And we need to be able to say, I need help. I don't like to ask for help, but I've had times when I had to. I don't like to depend on anybody else, but there are times that I have to. So the prodigal said, in a sense, I need help. And then he said, I know where to find it. He remembered his father and his father's house, and he said, you take back home, and this was in his own mind, my father's got servants that are in a better condition than I am. Here I am hungry in this hog pen, and he's got servants back at home that have everything they need. He remembered what was at home, and he knew where to find the help. I think, generally speaking, that those of us in the church are ready to give help to anybody who wants help. Sometimes we're not as outreaching maybe as we should be. But I think anybody that has left the Lord's work in this area really knows that if he comes back here, we're ready to help him. And the Father is ready to reach out to him. I know where to find it. And then he said, I'm going to find it. I'm going to repent. I'm going to go and I'm going to say, I have sinned. I'm no longer worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. That's what he said, not these other things that we've talked about most of the time tonight. In a sense, the monkey is on your back. There used to be a commercial like that. I don't remember what it was for. But it'd say, the monkey's on your back. And that statement means it's your decision to make. And I've used that more than once in extending the invitation. The monkey's on your back. I can teach. I can encourage. Others can teach and encourage. But there's not a person on this earth that can obey the gospel but you, for you, or be restored for you, except you. You see, God looks at us as individuals. We'll give an account, each one of us, of the things done in the body, 2 Corinthians 5:10. Stand before God to give an account, Romans 14:12. And so in a sense, the monkey's on your back. A young person who makes a mistake needs to realize, I've got a problem. I need to do something about it. I know where to find the answer. The negligent, those who have just fallen away, need to say, I've got a problem. I need to do something about it. Those who have committed specific outrageous sins, or maybe not so outrageous, need to be able to say, you know, I've committed a sin. I've done wrong. I need to ask for forgiveness. And even the elder brother, I've got a bad attitude, and I need to do something about it. Several years ago, there was a black preacher talking about his work, and somebody said, how's everything going? He said, we withdrew fellowship from six. Said, on what account? Said, on a bad attitude. Withdrew fellowship because it had a bad attitude. That's one of the biggest problems in the church, is a bad attitude, our attitude, like the older brother. But tonight we've talked about what the prodigal did not say and what the prodigal did say. And in the future, for each of us, let's always try to analyze where we are. None of us are in the hog pen. We haven't gone that far. But we do make mistakes. And when we do, let's come to ourselves, realize where we are, realize where we need to go, and realize where we can get the help. And at any time, we can approach our Father, and He's ready to, like that Father, run out to meet us and welcome us back and help us. So as days go by, today, tomorrow, the next day, keep taking an inventory of your own life. When you see something you need to make right, sometimes it's just between you and God. Sometimes it might just be in the family. Nobody else knows about it. But sometimes it's public to everybody. And a good formula to use is make anything right to the extent that it's been made wrong, whether private or public. And we need to always keep in mind, which may be the underlying hope in all of this chapter, that the Father is there waiting and looking and ready to meet us and ready to forgive us. If you are in any way in need of forgiveness from God,